Hello, and welcome to Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine's podcast series. Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine publishes original crime and mystery short fiction. I'm Linda Landrigan, editor of the magazine. In our podcast series, we bring you readings of short stories from the back issues of our magazine, and for this episode, we have Deborah Lacey reading her first story for AHMM, Taking Care, which we published in our May-June 2018 issue. Deborah Lacey is a PR and communications consultant in the DC area, and she is the editor of the Mystery Playground blog, that's mysteryplayground.net. After Deb's reading of Taking Care, she talked with us a little bit about how she decides what mysteries to read next.
The past year had been the worst of Lucy Ann's entire life. Her husband of 14 years had left her for a man. Her best friend embezzled $200,000 from their catering company, then took off for Mexico. And worst of all, her older brother Chet, the person she loved more than anyone else, died of a staph infection he got swimming in the lake next to the house where they grew up. Grief-stricken, embarrassed, and depressed all at the same time, Lucy Ann had never felt more alone. A man had always taken care of her. First it was her father, and then it was Chet. Then her husband. Minutes before Chet died, he told her she was going to have to start taking care of herself. She knew he was right, but she didn't know how. She felt so lost and unsure. More than a few people suggested she go to counseling to deal with the load, but Lucy Ann had her own way of coping. She'd come home from her catering jobs, smelling of garlic, and sit in the dark drinking large quantities of leftover wine until she was tired enough to go to bed. Sometimes she'd watch reality TV shows and wish she had the guts to go on a grand adventure. The shows gave her lots of ideas. She could live on an island, take singing lessons, or maybe she'd become a fabulous dancer. She would imagine herself wearing a dress covered in feathers, dancing the tango with George Clooney, and she'd make a promise to herself to sign up for dance class. Maybe she'd even meet a guy she liked there. But after a tough day at work, it was so much easier to pull off her apron, pour that glass of leftover wine, and watch other people live. So when the letter arrived in the mail from Matthew Rogers, Lucy Ann's high school sweetheart, she was both excited and relieved. She didn't have to troll online dating sites, emailing men who'd rather date someone younger. She knew Matthew. She knew his family, his likes, his dislikes, and besides, he already liked her. Dear Lucy Ann, sliding down the hill on cafeteria trays in the snow, pretending to do homework, sneaking rum in our Cokes at prom, losing your bikini top in Walden Pond, I know it's been years since we've seen each other, held each other. I can't stop thinking of you, those blue eyes and your wonderful deep laugh. Laughing, laughing, always laughing, that's how I remember you. I would love to hear that laugh again. Please call me so that I can. Yours always, Matthew. Her heart fluttered. Back in high school, he had been strong, reliable, and funny. Not only was he the football quarterback, but he could also fake a Chevy Chase fall like no one else. Back then, she'd worried that she wasn't pretty enough to go out with him, or popular enough, but he always made her feel good about herself, and best of all, he took care of her. The return address said he lived in Raleigh, North Carolina, clear across the country from her house in Los Angeles. His letter implied that he was single, but it didn't say he was straight, and it didn't guarantee that he wasn't a liar. She pinched herself. Everything wasn't about her ex-husband, even if she felt like it was. She was determined to phone Matthew. Maybe, just maybe, this was an adventure that she could handle. It took her a week to build up the courage to call, and she still worried about saying the wrong thing. She poured herself a glass of Chardonnay and jotted down notes. Don't talk about John divorcing her to move in with a man. Don't ask him if he's gay, yet. Laugh a lot, but not inappropriately. She poured a second Chardonnay before she made the call. The phone rang once before he answered. Lucy Ann, he said. She recognized his voice immediately. It's wonderful to hear from you. Lucy Ann knew she was supposed to talk next, but her mind went blank. She looked down at her notes for support. The first bullet said, don't talk about John. But now she had to say something, and it was in her head. "My husband and I are divorced," she said it too quickly. It sounded desperate. At least she hadn't mentioned that he'd left her for a man. "My wife died," he said just as quickly. "She was always eating salad. She died eating salad. I hate salad." "Oh." "That sounded weird. It happened a long time ago. What I mean is, it's been super hard, and I am finally ready for something new." Once she realized that he was just as nervous and awkward as she was, Lucy Ann didn't worry about what she said. The conversations became easier. They talked almost every night when she got home from work. Then one evening when Lucy Ann got home from a catering job, instead of pouring herself a glass of wine and drinking it in the dark, she turned on the lights. She curled up on the 10-year-old couch and called Matthew instead of waiting for him to call her. It was that night that Matthew took their conversation in another direction. "I don't know if I could have gotten through it when Mother died if you hadn't been there," he said. Lucy Ann couldn't remember how exactly she had helped him through this tragedy. She did remember his handsome teenage face in so much pain at his mother's funeral, and his father, the police chief, in his uniform, his face gray with grief. "She was there one day, and then she was gone," he said, sounding so sad. "I feel as though you understand." "It's like there's a little rip in your heart when someone dies," she said. "I understand now why some older people just let go. I couldn't understand it before I lost Chet. If you lose enough people in your life, your heart is so ripped apart you can't go on." "You do understand. I knew you did," he said. "Even now, sometimes I feel like I can't go on without Chet. He always took care of me." "I could take care of you," Matthew whispered. The very next night, Matthew called to invite her to Raleigh to stay at his house. She said yes immediately and booked her plane ticket. The next day she bought 3 new dresses, got her hair lightened, and started packing her bags. She had never done anything so impulsive in her entire life. She was so excited during the flight, she was practically giddy. When she walked off the airplane, she felt so special in her high heels and green dress that matched her eyes. Once she got past security, she scanned the crowd, hoping to see him first. She recognized him instantly. There he was, wearing jeans and a sweater, waiting with a gigantic bouquet of peach roses. It was her favorite flower. He remembered. Matthew was in good shape, and he smelled nice. She inhaled a deep whiff of his cologne. Unlike her ex-husband, Matthew had a full head of hair, no muffin top, and a smile that could lift her spirits. He gave her the flowers, picked up her luggage, and escorted her to a candy apple red Ferrari. The convertible was in VIP parking, and the top was already down. He opened the door for her, and she felt a little jolt. They climbed into the car and were soon headed out of the airport. As they were driving, she looked up into the nighttime sky and saw a star twinkle. It was magical. Once they got on the highway, the road noise and the wind as they drove made it hard to hear one another talking, so Lucy Ann stopped trying. She sat in silence, trying to hold her hair in place while the wind twisted her curls into knots. She wished that Matthew had mentioned that she needed a scarf. They drove through the city into a wooded area until they finally reached the long oak-lined driveway of the old plantation that Matthew called a house. The property was so big, it made Lucy Ann feel small. She imagined slaves working the grounds before the Civil War and being mistreated by their master. She half expected the staff to come out and greet them. She was relieved when they didn't. Matthew got out of the car first, and Lucy Ann patiently fought the urge to open her own door. She gave him time to get to the other side of the car and open it for her like a true gentleman. "Welcome to Hundred Oaks, my lady," he said as he finally opened the car door. The whole thing was a little over the top, but she gave him latitude because he remembered that she loved peach roses. She took the hand that he offered and climbed out of the car as gracefully as she could in her newly purchased high heels. Maybe she should have practiced that move at home. He unlocked the big oak door and paused for a moment. She was almost afraid he was going to try to carry her over the threshold, but she successfully avoided any possibility of that maneuver by rolling her suitcase straight into the foyer. The first thing she saw was a large painted portrait of Matthew's mother in a gilt frame. Now that was definitely over the top. Lucy Ann was surprised Matthew's late wife had allowed the painting to dominate the entryway. "I had it painted from a photograph," he said. "Mother would never have spent the money to get her portrait painted." "She's beautiful," Lucy Ann said, faking a smile. If she and Matthew did become a couple, this portrait would have to go. She missed Chet, but she didn't have a painting of him hanging in the hallway. She didn't want to talk about Matthew's mother anymore. Who talks about their mother on a first date? So she kept walking down the hallway to get some distance between herself and that portrait. She looked for a hanging mirror so that she could check her hair, but she hadn't gotten 5 feet when she hit another portrait. Her first thought was, this must be his wife. But since they had already spent enough time talking about dead people, she moved right along. I'm making dinner for you tonight, he said, lowering his voice a little. She knew it was meant to be seductive, but it really wasn't working for her yet. Maybe after a glass of wine. She hadn't had sex in a while, and she was overdue. I need to powder my nose, she said. It was such an old-fashioned way to say it, but the words were already out of her mouth. Turn right, first door on the left. She thought she followed his directions because when she opened the door, it led to a room full of musical instruments, a piano, a drum, and a bass. It certainly wasn't a bathroom. Dozens of paintings of women lined the halls. The paintings were well done, but a little odd. This room would have to be redone if she and Matthew started dating seriously. She closed the door and opened the one across the hall. This door led to the bathroom. She retrieved her brush from her purse and tried to fix her convertible crazed hair. When she got out of the bathroom, Matthew was waiting for her in the hall. Let's go out into the garden. I've set it all up so we can eat dinner out there. There are candles and lamps to light our way, and the sky is absolutely beautiful. I hope you like it. I selected all of the plants myself. I love shoving a spade into the earth and turning over the soil. There is so much life underneath dirt. It's wonderful. Do you have a garden? We're in the middle of a drought in California, so I can't really do much gardening. Some people are even replacing their lawns with AstroTurf. As they walked past the kitchen, she was overwhelmed by the smell of curry. Curry made Lucy Ann feel sick to her stomach. She hoped there would be some part of dinner she could eat, or this was going to get awkward. They walked out into the huge garden lined with beautiful large oak trees. The grass was green, and there was a beautifully set oak table surrounded by jasmine bushes. The little white lanterns hung from the oak trees, illuminating the garden of white flowers. Jasmine, white hydrangea, and white roses. While she had to admit it all looked magical under the moonlight, she was also allergic to jasmine and would start sneezing soon. Again, not super great on a first date. Do you like the table? He said anxiously. I had it made out of an oak tree from the property. It's lovely, she said. What a brilliant idea. Lucy Ann waited until Matthew had gone into the house and reached into her purse for her allergy medication. She took the pills without water. He returned soon, holding a teacup with roses on it. Would you like some tea? He asked her. The cup belonged to Mother. Tea? She had hoped that he would offer her alcohol, something to make this whole reacquaintance thing a little easier. Sure, she said hesitantly. Immediately, she could smell that it was jasmine tea, and of course she was allergic to the bushes and the tea. First, it would make her throat scratchy. Then she would just feel sick. Matthew knew about her allergies in high school, but that was so long ago. She didn't expect him to remember. She pretended to take a sip. Delicious, she said, lying to him for the first time. It was a small and easy lie, but she wondered if that's how her ex-husband's lies had started. Still, when she was sure he wasn't looking, she quietly poured the tea into the planter. Oh my God, Matthew said. I just remembered. Jasmine tea, you're allergic. Lucy Ann looked up at him awkwardly. She wasn't quite sure what to say. It's okay, she said. It doesn't bother me as much as it used to. That was the second lie. But I probably shouldn't have any more. Of course, he said. Your throat doesn't feel scratchy, does it? He looked so concerned about her, and it made her feel worse about lying to him. No, not scratchy at all, mostly because I dumped the tea into the bushes, she said as she shrugged her shoulders and bit her lip, hoping she looked cute enough to get away with it. You could have just told me. You served it to me in your mother's teacup. I didn't want to hurt your feelings, but then you were so worried about the scratchy throat. Sarah, my first wife, ate bad mushrooms. She complained of a scratchy throat, and I didn't do anything about it. Turned out the mushrooms in that salad were poisonous. You know what? I would love some wine. I probably should have brought a bottle. I have plenty of wine, he said. You didn't drink much last time I saw you, so I wasn't sure I should offer you any. I have wine on special occasions, she said. This definitely counts. The last time he'd seen her was in high school. Back then, she had snuck the obligatory sips of rum and coke during dances and football games, but didn't really drink more than that. She hadn't refused all alcohol like Janet Milbourne had. Janet was now a criminal defense attorney who regularly appeared on TV news programs. He couldn't be confusing her with Janet, could he? They didn't date, or had they? She couldn't remember. "I had better go and check on dinner," he said with a smile. "I'll come with you." "Stay out here and relax. You're my guest. Besides, the kitchen is a mess." She smiled and smoothed her skirt. The garden was a little boring, but she didn't want to expose herself to the curry smell in the kitchen unnecessarily. Matthew returned with 2 filled glasses of wine. Lucy Ann was bitterly disappointed that he didn't bring the bottle. She needed more than a solitary glass of wine to get through this evening. She looked at the wine and remembered what Chet had said right to her before he went off to college. "Don't ever take a drink from a man that you didn't see mixed and poured." She had just repeated this advice to her niece Emma a few weeks ago when she'd gone off to college. Lucy Ann took the crystal glass from him and was just about to make a toast when he set down his glass and went running back into the kitchen, worried that dinner was burning. She could hear him banging pots around in the house. Her mind went back to Chet on his deathbed, telling her to take care of herself. She looked down at the 2 wine glasses on the table and switched them. It was a silly thing to do, but she thought it would make Chet's soul happy. Soon Matthew returned with a tray full of dishes, looking proud. The smell of the curry made her lose her appetite. If she ate that curry, she'd spend the rest of the night in the bathroom. She didn't think a first date could survive that kind of bathroom alone time. "You have the oddest look on your face, Lucy Ann. Are you sure your throat doesn't feel scratchy?" She inhaled, and that was a mistake. The smell of jasmine mixed with the curry made her stomach lurch. "I feel fine, and I promise you that I did not eat any mushrooms." "I love you, you know. In high school, when we were young, I didn't realize what true love was, but now that I'm older, I do." "Oh, I probably shouldn't have said that," he said. "It was a long time ago," she said. But if he loved her once, maybe he could love her again. He had said on the phone that night that he could take care of her. She wasn't sure that that's what she wanted anymore. "Where did you go? Lucy Ann, I lost you for a moment." "I don't like fish, and I can't eat the curry. It upsets my stomach," she said, quickly pushing the horrid-smelling food away from her. "I appreciate you going to all of this trouble, but I can't eat it." He looked pained. "I should have checked beforehand. Drink your wine. I'll just go order us some pizza. There's a little place around the corner. They make a great calzone. I promise you'll love it." "Sausage with roasted bell peppers," he said. Then he took a long sip of his wine. "I'm allergic to bell peppers. It's digestive, not anaphylactic, but still really, really unpleasant." "I did not remember that." He took another sip. "It didn't start until I turned 40. First, I couldn't eat the green peppers, but red and yellow were okay. Then the red ones made me sick. And then last year, I lost the ability to eat yellow." She was pretty sure she had just made this the worst date ever. "Is plain cheese pizza okay? Maybe you should have given me a list of foods that you can't eat." He was trying hard, but this whole thing didn't feel right. Josh's betrayal was too fresh. She didn't know Matthew anymore. Maybe she never did. They had nothing in common. She felt like getting her suitcase and leaving right now. Instead, she drained her wine glass to calm her nerves. Matthew came back with another full glass of wine for her. "The pizza will be here in a few minutes," he said as he handed her the glass. "Drink up. There's plenty of wine." He looked at her with those still blue eyes. "I screwed this up, didn't I? Bad food. Scratchy throat." Again with the scratchy throat. The man was obsessed with a non-existent scratchy throat. "Drink up," he told her, pointing to the glass of wine. "Drink up!" She didn't like being told to drink up, so she set her glass down on the table. Maybe he was trying to get her drunk. She should have rented a car and stayed at a hotel. Of course, they have cabs in Raleigh. She had her cell phone with her. She could just call a cab and find a hotel. There were plenty at the airport. Surely she could find a room. But as she was planning, Matthew returned. "I think I was telling you about Mother. Did you know how she died?" Back then, everyone in town knew how she died. She had accidentally put rat poison in her coffee. Matthew had been in the driveway playing a pickup game of basketball with 2 neighbor boys. He hadn't heard her rip the phone from the wall as she tried to call 911, or her cries of agony as the poison killed her. Her ex used to talk about his mama, too. God, he was a mama's boy. "How's your dad?" she said, trying to change the subject just a little bit. The last time I saw him was at the funeral. He was such a nice man. His face was so gray that day. He blamed himself for Mother's death. He died of grief not long after. So many deaths in your family. It's so sad. It didn't occur to Lucianne until right now how incredibly hard it would be to confuse rat poison for sugar. It would be labeled differently, and it didn't look the same. No one keeps rat poison in the kitchen now, and they didn't do it in the 1980s either. The whole thing seemed really odd in retrospect. Matthew's dad had been the chief of police, and she didn't remember any investigation. Why wasn't there an investigation into your mother's death? She said it out loud when she was just thinking it. It didn't matter. Like most men she knew, he was too busy talking to hear what anyone else was saying. She had cancer, you know. The chemo was awful. The poison killed her faster than the cancer would have. But still, it was painful. The doctor said her throat started to itch, and then it closed up. I didn't want her to suffer. I loved her too much. Lucianne looked down at her feet where she'd put her purse. It was gone. She looked under the table in case she'd kicked it accidentally, but she didn't see it anywhere. Have you seen my purse? I want to take a picture of us for Facebook. We'll tag all of our old friends from school. I could have sworn I put my purse down below my feet, but it's not here. I'm not on Facebook. My wife, Sarah, she wanted children, but we couldn't have them. She said she couldn't live without them. I spent years trying to convince her that our lives were complete with just one another, but she wouldn't listen. The fear of online dating wasn't enough to make her sit there and listen to him drone on. He needed a therapist more than she did. My problem is, I love people too much. Lucianne was thinking that might not actually be his problem. Mushrooms, he said. Who thought mushrooms could be poisonous? A lot of mushrooms are poisonous. Everyone knows that. Even small children. She was obsessed with salad. I never told her she was fat. Why did she always eat salad? Pizza once a month wouldn't have hurt her. In the end, it was the salad that was dangerous. Vegetables killed her. Lucianne wanted her cell phone, and she wanted it now. She wanted him to stop talking, and she wanted to go to a hotel that had a nice bathtub with hot water and soft towels. She could feel the hot water running over her skin. My second wife, she didn't eat salad, but she couldn't get enough handbags. She actually told me once that if she didn't get an Hermès Kelly bag, she would die. Do you know how much those bags cost? Second wife? $5,000 for a handbag. She could get her arm cut off for less. And did someone do that? Cut off her arm? She knew she was being flippant. What the hell? No, no one cut off her arm. Mostly because I didn't buy her that handbag. He finished off the rest of his glass of wine in one gulp. But she went out and bought that handbag as soon as the divorce went through, didn't she? We didn't divorce. She died when she accidentally drank antifreeze. Antifreeze! It was Chet's voice in her head. Stop right there. Rat poison, mushrooms, antifreeze. Rat poison, mushrooms, antifreeze. It was Household Poisons 101. At that point, Lucianne wouldn't be surprised to hear there was a wife number three who had accidentally drank Drano. She tuned Matthew's confessional session out in her head so she could concentrate on her own problems. She hadn't eaten anything, so no poison there. She had thrown out the jasmine tea. She had wine, but only one glass. Her hand went to her throat. As usual, she was being ridiculous. Everything was fine. Matthew wasn't trying to poison her. He was just boring her to death. She was making up all of this in her mind. But she could still hear Chet's strong, masculine voice in her head. Rat poison, mushrooms, antifreeze. I lost you again. Your throat does feel scratchy, doesn't it? That's the first sign. First sign of what? She said. Her hand still at her neck. She concentrated hard on her throat. Not so much as an itch. You were so sad after your brother died and your husband left you. Every single night, sitting alone in the dark, slowly drinking yourself to death. I knew I could help you. I can see into women's hearts. And when life becomes too much, I take care of things. What does that mean exactly? Don't worry, my love. It will be over soon. You might as well drink the rest of your wine. It will make your death a little less painful. He was bigger than her, stronger than her, and he had the home field advantage. His backyard was so isolated, she wasn't even sure if she screamed loudly that anyone would hear. She had to keep calm so she could get to her purse or his car keys. She quietly kicked off her high heels. She looked at the table, hoping to see something she could use to defend herself. She reached for the sharp knife by her plate and put it in her lap. "It's too late for that, my darling," but the words got caught in his throat. Matthew put his hand to his neck and started to cough. Lucy Ann stood up, clutching the knife, and backed away from the table. He coughed up blood. "What did you do?" he asked her between coughs. The blood dripped from his face and onto his sweater. "What's the matter?" said Lucy Ann. "Does your throat feel scratchy?" There's so many wonderful ways to find new authors. The first way I find new authors is I ask a librarian or a bookseller. They read a lot of books, and I think it's important that you find a librarian or bookseller that likes what you do. Mm-hmm. So maybe give them your top three books of all time, and they can make recommendations based on that. And if you don't like what the first librarian or the first bookseller said, then go to another one, because sometimes it takes a couple of tries to get what you're looking for. The second way that I like to find books is reading short stories. Oftentimes, the short story writer will have also written novels. And what I find is if I like the way they write in a short story, I will also like their novels. So that's the second way. And then the third way is to look at book blogs and do a search on books that you really, really love and find people who've reviewed them and felt similarly. When you find those reviews, you can see what else that reviewer has discovered. And if they felt similarly about books you loved, then you might feel similarly, high chance you'll feel similarly about other books they loved. And with search engines, it's really easy to find these reviews on book blogs. I would tend more to independent book blogs than the highly slick published things, because sometimes those people are paid for reviews and it's not the true fans. But there are so many wonderful mystery blogs that you can find reviews and get really great advice on what to read next. So those are the top three ways that I would look for books.
Thank you, Deborah Lacey, for your reading of Taking Care. This story was published in the May-June 2018 issue of Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine. I hope you've enjoyed listening to the story. You'll find many other stories from our back issues on Podomatics and iTunes. Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine is published 6 times a year by Dell Magazines and Penny Publications. To learn more about us, you can go to our website, themysteryplace.com, or look for us on Facebook. You can find the magazine at your newsstand. Digital editions are available at all major e-tailers. This podcast was produced with the help of our managing editor, Jackie Sherbell. I'm Linda Landrigan. Thanks for listening.